Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to the show that has the questions that you want to consider. Today we're considering what we're going to do about some things, and the topic of this show today is and liberty and justice for all. Are we as Americans, African Americans, receiving justice? And we know that our brother has passed away at the hands of the police officer, Mr. George Floyd. He lost his life this week in a senseless crime of murder, witnessed by America, witnessed by you, and witnessed by the world. And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about how you feel the senseless death of African Americans. This is nothing new. We have a history in this country. Well, let's start with this. We were brought here by force, in chains, in shackles, to come here to work for our slave masters and our oppressors. And let me preface by saying that this is not a hate show. All you have to do is follow the facts. And so today what I want to do is I want to talk about the American experience, the police brutality that we continue to talk about. And we continue to experience as America, the rest of America, and the world watches idly by as we continue to be abused and mistreated in this country. And so I want to start by saying the mission of the African American Empowerment Association is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met. And this program is one of those ways we're going to try to meet the needs of our community by focusing on issues, by talking about politics, by looking at economics and health, fitness, nutrition, culture, and overall comprehensive education that will allow us to become the best people that we can be. It's today and every day. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. And we are improving the quality of our lives each day through empowerment, through peace, through motivation, through loving each other, through respect, and through becoming the example for what the world should be able to see in us by what we do. Thank you, Sam. I'm going to open up the lines now, and soon my co-host, Sam Macklin, will join us. But right now, if you're interested in joining me in the conversation, we're talking about the senseless death of our brother George Floyd this week, as well as any other thing that you might have on your mind today. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to open the lines up, and we're going to see what we have in store today. Again, it's Motivation and Empowerment, 365 days of the year. Each Saturday at 2 p.m., we're coming to you live. We have callers on the line, 9317. Are you there? 4358, are you there?
Yes, caller, sir, 9, I am. Zero.
Hey, brother, how you doing? Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, good. Well, the other person, did they pick up?
Well, we're on the line.
Oh, okay.
We're live.
Yes, sir. Well, okay, that's... First of all, good afternoon, brother.
Good afternoon.
I think that that the situation with George Floyd is you know, it's a very sad situation, man. The way that that their brother's life was taken, and to me, you know, he was treated just like an animal, you know, no consideration. You know, for life, no, you know, no thought. You know that the possibility exists that, you know, I could kill this man, and you could tell that that was the intention. You know, it's not like you couldn't tell that was the intention. You know, the guy put his hand in his pocket so that he could press down even harder. you know, on his neck, you know, and the fact that he was turned sideways meant that he was at a particular crucial part of the neck that could block the blood going through the brain. And I guess a matter of fact, I was just listening to the people that were medical people that knew, you know, about these different things. And so I'm just repeating what they said, but it was apparent that he didn't care if he killed that brother. I got a picture from a friend, you know, of that same police officer at one of the mega rallies with Trump, you know, and they got an arrow pointing to him. I'll send it to you. I meant to send it last night, you know, but, you know, to me, the solution to the majority of our problems is that we have to, it goes back to the same thing you were talking about last week, you know, we have to do better, man, economically, because I think that anywhere in the world, really, you have to build up your economics so that you can protect yourself socially and educationally. And, you know, as long as we don't build up the black community to be a successful social and economic institution, we're going to continue to run into this. You know, because these people, they feel like they can do whatever they want to because we're in the lowest realm of the economic society, you know, and they continue to educate us in a way that keeps us there. And until we decide to do something different, to put a new spirit into us, you know, they're going to, you know, treat us like that for as long as, you know, and like getting to a point where you say, well, yeah, well, we'll get into a physical exchange with them and all that, you know. And before you do that, you know, you have to make sure that you prepare, you know, to get into a physical exchange because these people never like to fight fair, you know, so they'll pull a, you know, pull a jet out and have a bombing run straight through your neighborhood. You know, so
let me ask you this, brother.
Yes, sir.
You talked about the economics piece, and I want the other callers online to chime in as well. But African Americans with money get pulled over, right, for no reason. So I want to kind of talk about the system that we function in. So we're talking about a liberty. And liberty for, and justice for all. What do we need to do to get justice in this country? Right? There's a constitution that is supposed to protect our laws and ourselves and the citizens, whether you are poor or rich or middle class. Where is the justice for this brother in this system, and particularly for us as African Americans? What do you think?
Well, is anybody else on the line besides us? Because I don't want to hog up all the, you know, responses.
All right, let's see. Callers, are you there? The lines are open, so let's keep going. What do you got?
All right. Well, I know what you said, you know, as far as there are certain inalienable rights that we have as human beings. And I think I'm alluding to another situation in this country. We, you know, see, like when you build up your economics, you tend to have greater influence on other things because these people function based on money. So it's similar to the model that Claude Anderson, you know, uses, that when you build up your economics, then you can build up a base to approach political people with finances. When you approach mm-hmm. the political people with finances, then you build up your legal system, your legal structure to mm-hmm. issues that pertain specifically to your group. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're the only people in this country that need to have our civil rights reinforced. I think it's like every 25 years.
Hmm.
Why is that? Why?
Well, they had to get a citizenship. That had to be
registered.
Right.
Well, right. What I'm saying is, why do we have to do that? Huh?
Right. I'm agreeing. Why do we have to do that? Why do we
right.
have to have a
because we are real citizens.
Huh? Come on in, brother.
Hello?
What you got?
Come on.
You know, the question becomes, you know, are we real citizens of this country? Because, mm-hmm. as the brother said, no one else, you know, when your vote has been put in based on the Constitution and on the timeline, right?
Right.
White folks don't, you know, that's not true for them. Is there permanently, right, as protection?
It's not true for Hispanics either. That's only for African Americans. It's only for us.
Well, that's because we're the ones where it had to be put into the Constitution. And I don't know all of the ins and outs about that, so I don't want to, you know, say too much in that area. But you all were also talking about economics. And I think that, you know, it is true that if we had more money, you know, that would be helpful. But here's the issue: we have a lot of black folks now with money, right? But we are using that in a collective way,
right?
You know, so when right now, if you black and you got money, you know, most. I don't even want to say most. Some of us are using it for our own benefit and gain, right, versus
right.
the collective power and strength, right? Because the question becomes, you know, where are we spending our money? You know, are we going to black stores, you know,
right.
and then, you know, and are we spending our money with each other, even if it costs
right.
more, or are we looking for the deal, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then even when we think about are we spending our money with ourselves, well, then the question goes to what are we producing that
mm-hmm.
we
right.
can that we can buy, right?
Right.
You know, I think our issues is so vast, right? And then you talked earlier about a mental change,
right?
Right? So, I mean, so I guess my question is always, how do we implement things on each one of those levels, right? Because I don't see it being either or. I see it being an and. We need all of it.
Right.
I agree.
Well, I don't perceive the world the same way I think that a lot of our people do, and I think it's other people that see things the way that I do, but the way I see things are is that we're living in an abnormal situation. This is not mm-hmm. normal, okay? For human beings, for one set of human beings to have trillions of dollars and then another set of human beings having access to maybe a trillion dollars, but they're programmed to give it right back. So basically, you have one group with all this money and one group that's very poor. Okay, that's up. Now, I look at the world that when you decide to change your condition, then everything else around you will change also. For example, they always keep telling us that they don't want us to just focus on the growth of the black community. They always talk about, well, you got to be concerned with the overall community. You can't just be concerned with yourself. You can't be into being separatist and all this and that and other. But the problem is with that statement is that we always wind up at the same spot. They tell us the same thing that they're going to tell us with George Floyd and this police officer that's supposed to be executed. I don't know if he'll make him one of the sacrificial lambs just to get through it. But my point is that, and this is just, wide-eyed enthusiasm, I guess you would call it. If we began to focus on developing our community and we started building in our community and building an environment that was human friendly, in other words, build stores that our people want to go to, and in the process, I guess what I'm getting at is we run into is through the fact that we're going to other people's businesses and establishments, and they're the ones that initiate sometimes what happens. For example, when the brother went into the store with a so-called counterfeit $20 bill, the owner of that store was an Arab, and he initially called the police, and the police came when I'm saying that none of that shit right there is normal. People with $20 bills, why would somebody come in there with a fake $20 bill if you're making a reasonable amount of money, a living wage? You have no reason to do that. So I'm saying that when your economics change, the way that you think changes. And I feel like that the community will be more willing to get involved when they see real progress taking place, similar to what you see happen with organizations like the Nation of Islam. They're not going to let a person come into the nation and just create havoc after all of this work has been put in to create a disciplined environment that's human friendly, where people feel safe. Community is so many things that go on that are abnormal behavior that at some point we're going to have to sit down and begin to resolve the basic fundamental problems of getting our community back to civilized living.
I agree.
And all
so
that,
let me throw this point at you, brother. Brother,
pardon?
Just 1 minute. Let's think about, because you talked about abnormal, you talked about money, you talked about poverty, and you talked about education, and the system that we live in has produced that. There's a system that we live in that disrupts our functioning. It educates our kids. It makes us feel better about ourselves. It has the police to have that frame of mind. So we're living
right.
in a dysfunctional system. And so how do we continue to coexist in this system that really has taken us and dehumanized us, destroyed many of our communities as we had tried to develop them? So we're talking about Black Lives, and you know we have a movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, and we know that is true. But how do we
right.
now say no more to that, and how do we move from this abnormal environment into a normal environment? A brother was killed on the front of our eyes this week, but that's
right.
not the first.
No, it's not.
Talk to me.
It was one a couple of weeks before that.
Yeah.
Shot with a shotgun. And they purposefully videotaped it because they were trying to say when he started throwing them punches and the guy has a shotgun against punches that he was resisting.
It could have been you. It could have been your brother. It could have been your son. It could have
exactly.
been your nephew.
Right?
It could have, if you're on the line, it could have been some woman's husband or son. We're dealing with a system that is hunting down our young men and abusing
right.
us to the point where they can murder us. We got people on the street saying stop. So the question has been thrown out there, how much do we engage the police when we know they're doing wrong? Somebody said, I would lose my life. I'll go over there and try to stop them. But the police could pull out his gun and shoot you in your head and you're dead.
Right.
This,
correct.
This is what he suffered. And again, he called out his mama. That's painful, man. Talk to me,
hey,
Carlos.
I understand.
What video talk?
I understand. And I understand these people that are very upset because I'm upset. You know, those are my people out there that are struggling to try to get the rights that we should have as human beings. But what I'm saying is I think that's why, you know, the topic that we're talking about, brother, first of all, I just want to qualify this, that this is not an easy topic, because if it was that easy, we would have just fixed it a long time ago. But I think that is one of the things that years ago that Malcolm was talking about when he was saying we need to stop taking our case to the fox. After the wolf attacks us, we take it from the wolf to the fox. He said we need to stop fighting and talking about civil rights, and we need to take it to another level, to human rights. Now, it's interesting that the United States, you know, gradually tries to distance itself from the world court. It's funny that they're doing that, especially with Donald Trump in office. It ain't no telling what kind of nonsense he'll do. But they try to distance themselves as though it's a lot of decisions that the United Nations made, and they just went against it. And the United Nations is the place that you ask for reparations, because the United States can do it on their own, but the United Nations can actually speak on our behalf that these people need reparations so that they can rebuild themselves, because y'all have done everything to destroy them, and you still are. So if we were to receive the proper funding and have the proper guidance in place, something with structure, I believe that we could work ourselves out of this, very similar to the brothers and sisters that built the Black Wall Street. Now, when they built the Black Wall Street, they did it very successfully because it was a time when black people could turn to nobody but ourselves. So we were forced to do the right thing. And we did it, and we did it well. The economy was so successful that it actually was a part of the world economy, and these white folks here didn't realize that until the Great Depression, of the fall of the stock market fell in the United States, because the first one part of the stock market to fall was the Black Wall Street, and when they wiped it out completely, that caused the other farm markets to fall, and eventually the British market and the market here fell. But actually the beginning of that fall was in 1921 when they destroyed the Black Wall Street. And a lot of people don't realize that we had a significant stake in the world there, and we're inefficient businessmen. We've just been brainwashed over the years, and we need to get some type of financial assistance, because I don't see us just immediately being able to come up with the kind of money that we need to put into programs to motivate people to be steadfast in participation in your program.
You know, just can I jump in? Because I think the brother is right, but I believe that we have not connected in with the world. You know,
I agree.
Black folks in America are not global. And that's one of the things that we have to change. Now, there are some organizations like Institute of Black World 21st Century that are making some great strides and efforts in that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and working to connect the black community with the world. And when other black leaders across the world who have spoken or tried to speak on our behalf and offer stuff to us, this society through media and our government has demonized them. You know, the one that comes immediately to my mind is Muammar Gaddafi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who offered money
right
to the black folks in America, who offered land to black folks in America, but this society demonized them. Brother Gaddafi was working to pull African money out of Europe and create an African bank, you know, an African banking system. And I believe that that's why he lost his life, and going back to some of the points that you made earlier about this being an abnormal society, you know, it is, and, you know, but it's gotten to the point where, you know, abnormal looks normal. You know, what you brought up about the brother going into the store with a counterfeit $20 bill. I mean, how many of us would know a counterfeit $20 bill if we had it in our possession?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, so, but then the other part is we've been demonized so much in this society that, you know, the immediate thought is to criminalize versus approach with compassion, you know, and say, hey, brother, you know, this, there's something wrong with this bill. Are you aware? You know, because money changes hands so often. I mean, I don't even look at the bills that I get, you know, because I trust the sources that they're coming from, right? The bank,
correct,
the ATM, the stores when I'm exchanging money. You know, so the question becomes, how do we begin to impact this image that has been put out there on us that we are criminals, right? And,
hey, I got
and,
a quick question.
You know,
sorry,
go ahead.
Just a real quick question. I just read an article that says that black people in the U.S. spend roughly about $1.2 trillion a year. Is that not enough money to get the economy, our economy, up and rolling? Because I heard you say we needed assistance. We're the biggest consumer group. So what more?
No, it's not enough money, brother. It's not enough money. And let me tell you why.
Just a quick question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I would like to respond. When I get a chance,
okay,
when you give me a chance.
Gotta go one at a time.
Here's why I say it's not enough money. Because we're spending our money with other people. There's out of that, there's only a small portion of that, how many trillion you just mentioned, that's recirculating in the black community. Why? Because white ice is colder. Korean ice is colder. Asian ice is colder. Everybody's ice is colder than black ice, so we don't spend our money with each other.
So it may as well
be nothing, you know. But until we change our mindset and we're willing to spend our money with each other, and that money circulates
so
in our community,
not there.
Then
it
can have some impact.
Don't.
So the money is there. It's just
yeah.
We're not spending.
Can I address
this? We're not circulating our dollars. Go ahead, brother.
I wanted to address what you said, because what I said was that we also get a certain amount of trillions of dollars, but brainwashed into spending that money right back with the white community or with one of the other communities. So basically, the money that we get, we don't even spend it wisely because we're not in the same mind. And so that's what I was talking about we have to change our thinking because, yeah, right now we do, as an economy, we're about the ninth or tenth largest economy in the world, but we don't use it. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, that the money is there, but the real thing that we need is we need structure. A lot of the black intelligentsia, one of the things that they've mentioned, and I hear just about all of them, even the ones that are ancestors now, talk about the fact that we lost our culture. When you lose your culture, that is vitally important because that's the rules that you operate by. And when we started operating by the rules of this European man, their rules are, I don't want to go into another realm of talking, you know, but basically we as black folks, we can understand things that are normal and, well, that are natural and that are normal, how we function. And if you read the 42 laws of Maat, you'll see that those particular rules are the same rules that they use throughout the entire continent of Africa. And it's been that way in one way, shape, or form for thousands of years. But we as black folks, we don't go by that anymore. We start trying to do things the way that white folks do. Well, the system that they have and the structure that they have, it doesn't fit us. And so when a structure doesn't fit you, then you become a misfit within a society. And that's what we are here. We're misfits. And that's why they treat us like misfits. And if we were to begin, and I just want to say this point, and then I'll let someone else talk. An example of what I'm talking about is Amos Wilson once said that the first educational systems were put together as a means of solving the community's problems. In other words, way back then, it might have been agriculture, and it might have been how do we produce more fruits and vegetables. And you say, okay, well, you know, these seeds you can put in the ground and they'll produce watermelons or they'll produce cabbage or they'll produce this, that, or the other. Mm-hmm. And through that system, culturally on that level anymore, but we have a whole series of issues that we need to be sitting down and solving so that we can create a more productive culture. And that's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Carl.
So I got another question. Would it be fair to say that the educational system is antiquated? Because if we created an education system that worked back in the 60s and 70s, and now everything is technology-based, but how many of the public schools are getting kids' future, what's to come? So you got the same curriculum that's in school, that they teach in school, that when I was in school. So if we look into...
Go ahead. It's not so much, you know, whether you're in a different age, a scientific age or a non-scientific age. That's not really the point. The point is that the way that you use what you learn. Like, the things that we learn, we never really play a role in it, and so we don't really use it. I don't know if that was how I wanted to phrase it. Like, the educational system, man, we have just as much stake in how far they've come as they have, even though they convince us that we have. But how many of our young men get to work engineering jobs?
So we don't create jobs. Can I chime in? Yeah, but
let me add this real quick. The current educational system, as with the past educational system, even the one in the 60s and the 50s and the 30s, nothing has changed. They're teaching white supremacy and black inferiority. That has not changed from whenever the public school system was created, and private school system for that matter, you know, because there are very few black private schools. Now, we have some HBCUs and all of that, but, you know, one of the questions that I've always asked is the purpose of this educational system to make black people into better white people?
Right.
And I think that as white people, as black people, we have functioned so long as white supremacy that sometimes we out-white white people.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to begin to exercise that inner white person that we have within us out, you know. And we do need to teach our own, you know. When I'm out here in the Pacific Northwest, and I look and at the Asians, and they have Saturday schools for Chinese, for Japanese, and for others, and the Jewish community does it as well, in which they're teaching their children what it is that they need to know.
Right.
You know, and since I just, you know, so to stick with the brother's question, you know, the education system is absolutely antiquated because, you know, it's not teaching us about who we are. You know, we have a lot of people that go to school, and even when we go to the college level, we got so many black folks going to college, and they never, in their programs, they never study black people. And when I say study black people, I'm not saying to study and research black people. I'm talking about our black scholars and academics that are out there, right? But their books aren't in there. You know, their books aren't being circulated. You know, you look at how often their books are being cited, and it's like 5 sites, 10 sites, 25 sites, citations, and you look at white authors, and their work is being cited 20,000 times, you know, because their work isn't being pulled up. We have two organizations. One is the Black Psychologists Association, and we have Black Social Work Association. You know, how many of us are aware of those organizations? Who's in those organizations, and then reading what they are writing? For the past 50, 55 years, both of those organizations have been writing and prescribing and telling black folks what it is that we need to change our condition in America. But people don't read them.
Well,
they're black.
I also think that the public school system keeps them from putting their suggestions into the public school system, you know, at their service. They keep the white psychologists' theories and stuff where they worked on white children to solve problems, and they solve everybody's problems with those solutions. And for our children, those solutions don't work, and they don't care. And if they really care. Excuse me, go ahead.
It's our job and our responsibility to educate our children just like every other community and culture does. With the Jewish community, they're teaching their children to read and write by 3 years old because they're studying the Torah. Right? You just mentioned that Asian culture had its students or children going to school 6 days a week. We have to be able to develop a system that supports the education and development of our children and our community, and that's our job. And we continue to depend on the system for welfare. We continue to depend on the system for every other thing that we need other than beginning to depend. Other communities don't depend on the system. That's our job. That's as men, our job.
That's right.
Go ahead, caller. So how do we do our job effectively?
You know, it's basically like I do believe in separatism. I'm not talking about segregation. I'm talking about having separate institutions that we're in control of, because we send our children to the public school system and we expect to get back a product of intelligence and aspiration and all of these things. And for the most part, I wouldn't think that I'm wrong by saying this. I think about 50% of our young men probably graduate from high school. And then out of the 50% that don't graduate from high school, probably about 25% of them end up in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So
true.
If that system is what you call working, and we can't see that it's not working, you know, it's something wrong with that, you know. But I'm saying, like, I'm for independent schools, but I don't have the resources to open up an independent school right now. So I don't like to be a trumpet or something that I can't bring into fruition right away, because it seems like when you make a comment, our people, you know, make you feel like you have to instantaneously come up with a solution. Well, really, I'm saying we need to work together on this. And get our minds focused on need independent schools. We need independent everything right now. Just because you are independent does not mean that you can't function with the rest of the communities in this country. It simply means that the rest of the communities all seem to be functioning together except for us. And we're hurting the worst. I live out here in Shoreport, and I watch these West Asians come over here, like from Pakistan and, well, from that whole Mediterranean area. They come over here and they build these $800,000 to $900,000 homes. Cheapest ones probably about $400,000 or $500,000 that they're moving into, and it's because they come over here with a plan, and they come over here with money. You see, so I'm saying, like, we have to figure out a way to get our people in the same mind.
Well, they come over here and set up businesses, and we go in front and give them our money.
Correct.
Right, but they come from a system. Right? And so I think we have to stop making comparisons, because our foundation is different from theirs. I think we have to change our mindset and our thinking.
Absolutely.
Right? Again, I think the other caller made a statement about our thinking. We've been trained to think and behave a certain way, and it is our conditioning that we have to change. Our thinking about ourselves, our thinking about economics, our thinking about politics. They got Chinatown. What do we have? Those people have systems and organizations in place to support the community, and we don't have that. Is that because of us, or is that because of the system? Is that our lack of information and knowledge? What is it? Well, we have to come up with strategies right now to start changing those things. Effective strategies.
I call it internalized oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's our biggest issue. That's what, you know, we have a lot in our community to say that economics is the issue, and I absolutely agree with that as well. But we could have all of the money in the world, and as long as our mind was still screwed up, it does us absolutely no good, right?
Right.
So we have to change our feelings about self, you know, and how we feel about ourselves and each other.
Right. It's a complicated situation, brother, because I agree with everything that you have said, you know, and it's kind of hard to, it's so much going on, that it's hard to really stay anchored in with one topic to, like, solve it and then move on to the next without group functioning. You see what I'm saying? Like, we need
Absolutely.
To have group functioning where we like, okay, look, this is what the deal is. Go into a whole neighborhood, have, I'm just giving an example. You go into a whole neighborhood and have everybody meet at the convention hall or whatever and say, hey, look, this is what's going on. We want some suggestions because we're going to solve this shit right now, okay? And give me some suggestions.
Hello?
We're going to operate. We're going to work. So you say, well, the neighborhood got a bunch of trash all in the dirty and filthy, and I don't like that, and I don't feel clean. Okay, I get a broom, and we're going to clean it up. You see what I'm saying?
That's okay. I just heard it.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Yes,
hello?
Sir, we can.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, you know, I've listened to the conversation, and one of the things that is a hard reality for us to accept is this, and I'll use the analogy about basketball. One of the things that if you go to an NBA player, when you get to the team, you already have skills developed. And then when you get on that team, you've learned those skills individually through your own practice, through your own work. But then when you come together as a team, you have to work together. We cannot put the cart before the horse. We don't have the individual skills psychologically, as far as our integrities. Our homes are dependent. And then we want to come together and work independently. Impossible scenario. You cannot
come
go
on,
to
sister.
The NBA and do not know how to do a jump shot. You can't go to the NBA and don't understand a pick and roll. Our homes are dependent, there is no way we can come together and underdeveloped that we can come together and work as a team. We got to address the mess at the house first. Number one, male and female relationships are on an all-out, completely decimated, can't get along, raising children that see the division. So then all of that dependent behavior, then we want to come to a system and say, I want to be independent. It will never happen. If we're in a war and you don't know how to shoot a gun, I don't care what
right.
the general is saying. It will
right.
never be executed. It will never be executed.
Can I ask you a question?
So
sure. if I could
add to
the
conversation.
Okay, hold
on. We got two people talking.
Well, let me just say this. Let me just say this because I don't want to take up. Okay, go ahead.
I just want to ask you one question because you made your point, and I just so happen not to agree with what you said. And the reason I say that is, how did the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad success with the Nation of Islam with whores, drug addicts, people off the street, and he built the most effective organization, not just black, and disciplined organization in the world. So how did he do that?
I think that one of the things he did was people developed a sense of self-respect.
The bottom line is that
self-respect is not just an outcry or an individualistic statement. Most of the problem that we have is that in our homes, and I'm not saying that I have all the answers to the problem because we've been so colonized and divided, but it starts at home. And if we don't get that straight, then when we come together, we have not learned to cooperate at home. We have not learned to respect at home. We have not learned to take turns at home. We have not learned to fight fair at home. We have not, you know, so, you know, when we try to come together, we've got to own that we come together with a disability. And if we are not willing to acknowledge that, correct it, then we will just constantly have conversation and go round and round and round and round and round again. It's not about anybody blaming anybody. It's about us accepting responsibility for the actions that we have. What part do I play in this? All those young men on the street, they have a mother and they have a father. If fathers aren't willing to say, what part do I play in this, and then not take ownership of that, then that'll be a category that people will side off in and make excuses for. Women that make a decision and say, okay, now that I've had this child, what part do I play in the family not being a unit anymore? We both have to ask that question. It's not a one-sided question. It's not just men have to ask that question. Women have to ask that question.
If I could cut across you for a minute.
Go ahead. Sure.
A number of the things that you said have merit, and yet probably a greater portion of it I rejected. What you did is you gave a very solid explanation for how effective the slave trade and the enslavement mentality that was deployed a number of years ago, how effective it has been. But the truth of the matter is why those realities do exist in our communities. It is not all of our communities. So there are knowledge, skills, capabilities. There is insight in our community to be able to drive us forward. And so what we have to do is work against that mindset that says that we're not skilled, we don't have the integrity, we don't have the ability, we're handicapped. If we believe that, then we'll never be able to make it to a place where we have defined ourselves for ourselves. So I will just put this to you as a thought process. Let us look among us and identify that remnant that has the ability to lead in a way that we're sharing the knowledge and the skills that we have amassed. Because the truth of the matter is there is no society. We as a Black Americans have been mischaracterized to make it look like we're the only community that has dysfunction. But guess what? The Asian American community has dysfunction. The white community has dysfunction. Their families are not intact. Their children are not. Their children doing meth and doing stuff they shouldn't be doing. I've seen a number of white people out there throwing bricks through windows on the news that I've been seeing and all of this rioting. So I'm just saying, much of what you said is a reality, but it does not have to be the story that we hold fast to. Too many times we are so focused on what isn't right that we might overlook what is right. And there are a number
I agree with that. I think the assumption is that when I talk about dysfunction, I'm not talking about that dysfunction has to be the dilapidating factor. One of the things is it's when I say what's happening, what part do I play, is that it's not that we have to be perfect. But inside, what we do learn is that even within the dysfunction, there were codes that we live by. I'll give you a perfect example, men cheating on their wives. But there was a code in the community that nobody said that was right, but the woman that was involved with the married man understood, wait a minute, I'm not the wife. And so there was a code that understood, I understand what my position is, or if somebody is fighting, or someone is fighting and they get caught doing the wrong thing, the code wasn't that we didn't understand that someone did something wrong, but we still said, you know what, there's a right way to do it. I'm just saying is that the dysfunction is not the issue. It's that we don't have codes anymore that we live by. I mean, when I was a young woman, values, and I'll just say this, without those values, because even though we were being done wrong in slavery and we had to go in and clean white people's houses, we still had a value system that says, even if I go through the back door, I still don't steal. It wasn't justifying the system. It wasn't saying it wasn't right. It didn't say it wasn't dysfunctional, but we still had some values that we could go back to and survive and keep some cohesion. Only thing I'm saying is that without the values, we can't keep the cohesion. That's my point. I'm not trying to say that we're so dysfunctional that we cannot organize, but if we don't have some values or that we stand by, then there's no way to keep the cohesion. And the cohesion is the problem. It's not about all the individual stuff. It's about when we come together, how do we keep the cohesion? So if that was not my intention to present us as dysfunctional, like we're the only ones dysfunctional. But that wasn't my intention.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on about 2 minutes left in the program. We got a lot of ground that we've covered today, and I'm going to open it up, but you got to be lean of expression for final comments. And it has to be brief. You cannot take up a whole lot of time. I'm going to open the lines up again so everybody have a chance to give their final comments. And I'm going to start with, 9317. Carl, are you there? The line is open. Well, we got 90 seconds left in the show, and I'm just going to end it this way, and hopefully you can come back next week for a healthy discussion. We have to decide within ourselves what the mindset will be, what the new breed of thinking will be, what will be our philosophies, what will be our strategies, what will be our agendas and direction that we will go in as a culture and as a community. It will be up to us what that reality will be. And I challenge each of you that are listening to the sound of my voice to make it your creed and your covenant that you will do everything that you can to be a responsible citizen, practicing peace, becoming a responsible citizen, a responsible parent, a responsible friend, a responsible husband, a father, a mother, a daughter that represents us in the best that we can. Our ancestors fought, bled, and died for this country. We built this country, and we should now represent those ancestors in a way that continue to represent them as we move forward. Thank you again for calling to the show. Again, next week at 2 o'clock, it is this show, Liberty and Justice for All. It is the African American Empowerment Show. Come back and visit us next week. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.